Hi there, we're the Two Fat Expats, and while we're ample in both personality and gusto, that's not quite what the Fat Expats are about. Fat Expats make the most out of expat life, filling it up to the brim and packing it all in while they can. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie based in Qatar in the Middle East, and in a moment you're going to meet Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Between us, we've been in over 10 locations as expats in the past 15 years or so, and we've learnt in that time that expat life is much more fun the fatter you live it. Okay, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's dig in. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
I gather that hesitation is because of the voice and the cold.
Yes, we've had a little virus in the house, and we know it's a virus because I had to take one of my children on a Sunday to the emergency doctor because I thought they were dying from their sore throat. And we had a strep test, and it's not a, it wasn't strep, so it's just a virus. Oh. The cold virus.
Oh, that's shitty. I actually, both of my girls got sick in Australia and they've both been home to granny for the weekend. The doctor thought that my eldest might have had influenza B. And so there was mass panic. And of course, she's walked in the door at granny's. Granny's taken one look at her and gone, "You don't have influenza B. You just need a good feed and a decent sleep."
And granny fixed her, just like that.
She did. She fixed her because I think it was just that panic of, you know, being in, at boarding school and starting to get sick and not having that same care, you know, sort of thinking, oh, my God, I'm getting really sick and nobody's really noticing that I'm getting really sick. And, you know, suddenly getting home to granny who says, drink this, eat this, lay in that chair, I'll bring you a blanket and pillow, don't move. And, yeah, she fixed her. She had one day off of school on Monday and went back in perfect health. But I'm so, so sad that you're sick and feeling that bad.
No, it's crappy and the weather's crappy. I just looked last year, I turned on the heater in the middle of October and it's the middle of September and we've had the heaters on already, which I don't think augurs well for our heating bill, but honestly, it's just too cold.
Oh, so you're not having a happy Hamburg day today?
I'm happier now I'm talking to you.
All right. Okay, so Nikki, we kicked off this season by doing a new segment called What's Hot in the Group. And the group, of course, is our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, not to be confused with our page, which will be disappearing soon. But if you want to find us, we have a Facebook group, which now has, I think, nearly 3,000 members in it, and it is going gangbusters. I love that group. God, I love that group. It's one of my favourite groups.
It is. It is a great group. Everyone's so kind and helpful, and there's some really cool stuff.
There's some very cool stuff. So this week I asked the question, how many expat locations and where would you go back to in a heartbeat? And the reason I asked it that way is, do you find, Nikki, that so many people say when you've been to lots of different locations, people's first question seems to be, so where was your favourite?
Yes. Can't say. It's like a favourite child.
That's exactly what I was about to say. You can't say. It is like picking a favourite child because each location has those friends that you had and that house and that school teacher and, you know, the next door neighbour, and you can't pick one above the other. But I thought asking where you'd go back in a heartbeat is a really interesting way of sort of seeing where maybe was the most livable.
Yes, who couldn't decide? I couldn't decide. So everyone responded and I went, can't decide. There are pros and cons to everywhere. I'm crap at this. I can't decide. Hong Kong has my heart because it was my first. South Africa has amazing weather, which is super appealing right now. Atlanta is the most recent. I noticed a lot of people said they're most recent as well, because that's, you know, that's what's tugging on your heartstrings right now. So I can't decide. But I noticed you said KL.
Yeah, I picked KL because, you know, I always used to say Jakarta and I love Jakarta. But I've met so many people now that have done Jakarta recently who've said to me, yeah, I don't know, maybe if you went back there now, you wouldn't feel the same way. And I think it's that whole thing. That was my first location. The first is always special, I reckon. And I just did love that lifestyle. I don't know if I would like it with teenage kids, which is where I am right now. But KL, the reason I loved it was it really factored in so many different religions and nationalities. And, you know, you just celebrated everything. You know, you're doing Ramadan one month, you're doing Deepavali the next, you're doing Christmas. You know, there's little Buddhist temples everywhere because there's so many Chinese people. It's an easy city to live. It's close to Australia. I would go back there in a heartbeat. But I noticed there were quite a few KLs, but Japan came up.
And how about Ho Chi Minh City? All the time. Or maybe they just were regulars, every sort of 5 or 6 comments.
But there were lots of people also that said they didn't believe in going back. You know, they completely refuted the idea of returning. Would you return?
That's what I've always said, that I can't believe that it would be the same if I went back. Do you know, I think there's one exception to that, because I think in America, in Atlanta, we lived in a suburbia. We still have our house there. If we went back, all our neighbors are still there. I think it's different. That was a different kind of place for us. So I think if we went back, it would be the same. But I think to the other places, it would never be the same. And I don't know. It's not that you wouldn't love it as much. It's just you'd have to learn to love it again or differently, like another child.
Now, there was 145 comments or something like that. Now, did you say that someone collated the results?
Yeah, at some stage during the comments, and I went and quickly had a look for it this morning, I couldn't find it, but someone collated it. So you sort of thought, gosh, a lot of people are saying this, and then someone had gone through and counted them all, and actually there were just as many of that as there were of another. So yeah, no, I thought very dedicated by that person who was obviously having a wine and enjoying reading through the comments.
Okay, so the other thing that came up, Nikki, was I have been desperate to start a book group. For the longest time, I have had complete book group envy from my girlfriend, Carol, who's just seems to have one of the, you know, those fabulous women's book groups that seem to have a good time and go on outings. And last year they went to Italy. This year they're planning their...
Oh, well, yeah. I was going to say, I was in a great book group in Hong Kong, but we never went overseas.
No. I was in a great book group in Canada where we threw out the idea of each reading the same book each month. And what we did was we each brought a book that we'd read, and then you discussed that book just quickly, like did a quick 2-minute breakdown of what the book was, threw it on the table, other people threw theirs on, and then at the end of the book group, people could take the book home with them and choose to read it. And I thought that kind of got rid of that whole, you know, some people can get a bit titchy in book groups about how they felt about the book or discussing the book or whatever, or the whole, oh, I didn't read the book, and then people getting narky about that. So tell me about your book group in Hong Kong.
Our book group in Hong Kong was run by the very impressive, very organized Kerry Richards. And Kerry Richards, everything in her life follows a certain way. So she decided there were going to be 10 people in the book group, and there were 10 people. And people wanted to join, and she'd say, no, there's a line, you need to wait. So when someone would leave, she would put someone else in, and she just was, no one had to worry about anything because Kerry had it under control.
So where did you have it? So where was it hosted? How did you choose the book? And how did you get, could you get all those books in Hong Kong at the time?
Yeah, I guess we could. So we had a rotational hosting. A lot of us lived in the same apartment complex, so that was quite handy. I only had to like walk out my front door and a few steps and go up another lift, and it was excellent. It just was a really nice group of girls. I worked full time, and so I didn't see a lot of these people all the time. So book group was one of the places that I saw them, which was so nice. And we chose the book by, I can't remember, we all had to take ideas, I think, and then we chose at the end. And as I said, Kerry was excellent, so there was no dilly-dally. I don't think we ever had a problem with things that were available there. I can't remember.
Yeah, see, I remember living in Libya and we had a book group, but one person would bring in the book, and it really was so remote back then that, you know, it really was a big deal of who was leaving the country, who could go and access the book and bring the book in. And then it would go to some place, and I hate to say this, and I hope this is not going to put me in jail, some organization would then photocopy the book.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, as long as you don't say what books you read during that time, I think you're going to be okay.
And I know that happened in Asia as well, because that was, you know, that's the whole thing. It was getting access to these things. And it's the same pretty much in Qatar, in that we have a great access of books, but occasionally there'll be one that just won't make its way here. Do you know, like, we don't have a Borders bookshop, but we have WH Smith and a couple like that, but we don't have that full range that you would maybe get in other countries.
We had a lot of English bookshops in Hong Kong, so, and we didn't have any kind of censorship, so it was kind of easier for us. But what about now with Kindle? Can you just get what you want on your Kindle?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I'm going to do with this current book group. So I put a note out in the Facebook group asking if there was anyone in Doha that wanted to join. And there were oodles of people that also wanted to join. So I think there's now about 23 of us in the group. And I'm just going to let the dust settle for a couple of days, and then we'll work out. I've said that it's going to be on, I've picked the date and the time, and I've picked the book. I've been incredibly bossy in my first approach, so maybe I've taken the Kerry Richards approach, because you kind of do have to be a bit like that with a book group. Though I think it's been crazy that I haven't been in a book group. I saw my girlfriend Erica said that in Amsterdam she's got a girlfriend that Skypes in to her book group in the States with a glass of wine and still joins them every month.
But I guess that also depends on timing. You won't want to be having a glass of wine at 5 a.m. or something like that. So,
yeah, and that's why the kind of virtual book group didn't appeal to me so much. But are you going to start a book group, Nikki, in Hamburg, or do you feel that,
well,
it's not something you could fit in?
I don't know right now. There is a book group that exists that I'm thinking about joining, so I don't know whether I'm going to join it or start my own. There's all sorts of things popping up in local Hamburg expat Facebook groups lately. That's great. That someone's just started a baking club.
Oh.
And I said, I'm very happy for you to bring me the baked goods, but I'm not a baker, so I can't. And then
they
offered to teach me.
Do you all go and bake at the same place?
Well, no, I think you bake and then you meet with your baked goods. So, yeah, I and it's someone who works, so I think it would be sort of an after-work thing. And, yeah, she's an Australian girl, though. I've played netball with her here. So she started this baking group, and everyone's going to bake and then meet with their baked goods and then exchange recipes and things like that. If you take a bite and you like it, I guess you get the recipe. Something else in the group this week which I thought was amazing, and might not just be because my husband works in shipping, but there was a Marsha put in the group a 10-minute video of a 30-day time-lapse journey of a container ship that went from the Red Sea to Hong Kong. And it went through Colombo and through Singapore. Did you get to see that?
Oh, my God, Nikki, I loved it. I actually watched it just this morning. And the thing I really loved about it was the text down the bottom that showed you sort of where they were and what was going on. But there were so many things I hadn't thought about. Like, for a woman who's had a lot of cargo and packed a lot of shipping containers, not that I've personally packed them myself, but I've been definitely very involved in the process. But I hadn't thought about that bit when it leaves your door, the kind of adventure, your, you know, the stories your furniture and your belongings could tell. But it was also, for me, the most amazing bit. Yes, it was beautiful, but it was also when they let, every time they dock, like it takes about an hour for a shipping container to dock in real time. And then when they showed the cranes coming over and how they would take off the containers, those guys have to be very, very precise about how ships are loaded. But you know all of this because you're married to someone who does this.
That's right. Well, I mean, I've never seen him move a shipping container, and I don't think he's got the qualifications to work one of those cranes. But yes, it is. It is quite an impressive thing, the moving of the shipping containers. And that's what I always say to him when our ships, when our containers go. I said, please put ours in the middle of the middle. I don't want it near the edges.
No. And I realised, you know, the ones that are on the top kind of have to be on the top because if you get to Sri Lanka first and then you're going to Singapore and then you're going to Hong Kong or whatever, it was just amazing, just the process.
Yeah, that's a very complex logistical exercise, putting containers on a ship when it's when they're going to go like through a series of ports. Yeah, I do know that. I've heard conversations about those things before. Yeah. But then how about the night skies? How about that? Did you know there were that many stars out there?
The sky was amazing. And only last night we were talking about this, my little guy and I, because we went for a nighttime swim. He was saying, because we couldn't see a lot of stars, and he was asking me, you know, why does light on the ground affect, you know, the stars that you see in the sky and whatever. And we were talking about places that you see a lot of stars and being out in the desert. But of course, being out in the ocean, I mean, they get skies like nothing else I've seen. Like, it was just incredible, wasn't it?
It was the most amazing thing. I just thought it was so impressive. So thanks so much to Marsha for sharing that one with the group. Yes. And the last thing that I thought that was funny and worth a comment, and it did get over 100 likes, was the photo of the washing machine with the Russian to English translation. It was very, very funny. And I must say that when I came and my washing machine was here, I had a bit of a heart-sinking feeling because when I looked at it, all the instructions were in German and the dial was in German, but I was able to do a translation that didn't say things like, yeah, like the Russian washing machine said with the translation.
Same, same. And it happens every country you go to, doesn't it? Like you suddenly realise that things that you hadn't even contemplated being in another language are going to be in another language, and you're going to have to very quickly learn your left to your right and your up to your down.
I know. And even when you go like to use your card in the machine and it gives you two options to press the button, like, if they're not coloured, who knows? You know, you're on the screen and it says, you know, one word or another word. You're like, which words cancel and which words move forward?
Okay, okay, okay. So our hot topic for the week. Someone had shared in the group, which kind of made me think of something. They'd shared a post about, you know, being an expat and that awful term that I really dislike called being an expat wife. Mm. I once had a post called the expat wife that went viral, and I think after it had, you know, something like 100,000 views, I suddenly decided that no, perhaps I might change it to the expat woman, because I'd kind of written expat wife in a very ironic way and then realized I was just adding to the problem. But a few years ago, about 3 years ago, I wrote a post called Powerless and Pissed Off, and it was, I'd basically recounted living in Kuala Lumpur, where I'd met this fabulous woman called Deborah, who was one of those women, Nikki, that I reckon we've all met in our time, who just seemed to have the whole expat gig down pat, in that she had very much two portable careers that she could take wherever she wanted. And she would do hairdressing from home, and she also did, she was an aerobics instructor, and so lots of cash in hand, lots of meeting lots of people, and she was doing really, really well. And I was really jealous of her because my role at the time, I had worked in recruitment and HR, and I'd gone to go back to work in KL and been told that I had to work full-time, that part-time wasn't an option at all. And I had a, you know, at that time, I think an 18-month-old child. And so I just couldn't work my way around it. I didn't have childcare that I would feel comfortable, you know, leaving Lizzie at the time. And I said to her, you know, that I was really jealous of what she'd done. And she kind of pointed out to me that even as organized as she was and as well as she'd managed it and as good as it was, she really felt quite powerless anyway in the fact that her husband's job could change in a heartbeat and they would get moved. And he did work for one of those companies that moved a lot. So, you know, it was, they were off sort of anywhere between a year to sort of 3 years. So she had to keep setting up all the time. And so I'd written about women who'd started new study and new careers and new businesses only to be told that they were, you know, sort of leaving in a heartbeat. Sort of all the different projects that I'd thrown myself into and sort of how I felt about that, I guess. I'd put it out to the group to say, you know, do you feel powerless and pissed off or not? And I was just really interested in people's reactions. There were some fantastic comments, Nikki, and this is what I love about this group, is I think it's, you know, we say all the time that it's supportive, but I think it's not just that it's supportive, is sometimes maybe you can see a completely different perspective of the one you had. So I guess first, Nikki, I want to know, do you feel powerless and pissed off, or do you feel powerful and that you're in control of it?
Well, excellent question, Kirsty. Funny, I'd known you were going to ask me, which I did. Still don't have a good answer. Look, I do and I don't. I just think sometimes, I mean, so we talked before about where we'd move back to. Hong Kong for us was our first location. We lived there for 6 years and I had a full-time job and I loved the job and I loved the location. And then since we've moved from there, the experience has not been the same for me. So I am always almost comparing my experiences to that time and place. So in a way it was a benefit because it shows me what could happen, and it's also a little bit of a burden in a way. No, burden's the wrong word, I can't think of it, but to say that, you know, if I don't have that here, is this place not as good? So I don't feel powerless and pissed off. I go with Rachel in the group who said, baby, life is a roller coaster, just gotta ride it.
Yes, I like that too.
I honestly, that is how I feel. So I never, you talked in the article about being happy about working full time in Calgary and being happy to take a step back in Qatar. But that was at the beginning of your time. I know you've done lots of things since then. So, I mean, what do you feel about it without really committing myself one way or another?
Yeah, no. And, I mean, that's the thing. I guess you don't have to commit yourself one way or another, I guess. But it's how I feel now is completely different to how I felt when I wrote the article, or maybe even my situation now is completely different from the article. And I guess I've been through, like you said, I went back to work full-time in Canada, and I remember thinking when I got back to work full-time in Canada, well, why did you spend all those years so worried about your bloody career and whatever? Because now that you're back full-time, it doesn't matter. Do you know, it's irrelevant. And it didn't seem to affect my career that much because I went right back to what I was doing, which was working in HR and recruitment. So, and I managed to sort of work my way up the food chain fairly quickly. So it all sort of worked out. But then when I came to Qatar, you know, the possibility wasn't there, and I started writing and I sort of started to see that I could create a more, I guess, flexible work arrangement. But of course I didn't have that same sort of salary coming in, but I was, you know, learning new things. And I think that happens a lot when you start doing sort of more work from home and starting to find, you know, you're doing the, even if you're doing online study or you're doing some sort of self-improvement, you suddenly learn things. I said to my husband the other day, he was saying to me, oh, what'd you do this morning? And I said, I did a couple of hours work and, you know, I think it was the day I recorded the podcast with you or I did something with you, but I know what it was. And then I said to him, oh, and then I spent an hour this afternoon teaching myself how to record a screen video. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, oh, I wanted to do a how-to tutorial on, you know, how to click a button on our website. And I said, so I went to this site and I taught myself how to do a tutorial. I said, do you know how to do one of those? He said, no. But I mean, that's something I would not know had you and I not started this podcast. Do you know, it's not something I would have had to do. But it's something I bet people have to do within online study sometimes to show how they've done things, or if you've started your own website or you're doing your own business, whatever. Anyway, I'm off track of the powerless and pissed off. I guess where I am now is I'm very lucky that I did get to, through writing and working, I did get my job at Barefoot, and it gives me, you know, I work 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, but that gives me that regular income, so I'm feeling quite in control of that, I'm bringing money in. But on that, this was one comment that really, really has got me thinking, and I really want to talk to Donna, who left this comment.
Yes. We want to talk to Donna.
Yes, she said, I don't feel powerless at all. I have my own bank accounts and half the money my husband makes goes into my account. So if anything should ever happen, I have financial freedom and stability. She said, yes, I had a job career back before here, but I'm no more an accountant then than I am a man on the moon. I think people get too caught up with their title and role, and I'm who I say I am and who I want to be at any given moment. Who I am isn't something that changes because I don't work anymore.
Oh, yes. Let's have some
round of applause. Yay. But also to that, she has a husband or partner, I gather. Did she call him a man? Yes, husband, who went along with that deal. And I think within the same thread of comments, there was a woman who said she felt powerless because her husband just doesn't understand why she can't just go out and get a job. Do you know, that he can't see any harder for her. And he said the way he got his job and this opportunity to live overseas was pretty much the exception to most rules. But of course, he can't see that. He thinks that she should be able to just get past the local language and get past all of that and just go and get herself a job. So I guess they are two very different relationships as well. And does it, Nikki, does the powerless and pissed off come down to a lot of the partnership you're living in and whether the feeling that the person you're living with is the vibe they're giving out? Like if you're living with someone who's saying, no, your role right now within this family, how you do this, this and this is very important, and yes, you know, let's set up a different bank account so you can feel secure and safe financially, is very different to maybe someone begrudgingly going off to work and looking at you like you're being lazy.
Yeah, I think it's to do, that's one part of it, the relationship. But I think you have, without sounding all inspo and ridiculous, it's about how you feel about yourself. So it could also be the stage of life that you are. Are you going through a midlife crisis? Do you have a crisis of confidence that may or may not be brought on by where you're living and what situation you're in? So I think that, I don't know, I think, yes, you're right, but you have more power than you think over your situation, which sounds ridiculous and I hate myself as I say it, but I really believe it.
No, and I'm with you because my favourite comment of all of them was Danielle's, and Danielle said maybe it's just a case of owning it, that you choose to be in an expat situation, be it through your partner or through your own adventures. I'm an expat kid and now living in my own expat adventure that I fought hard to make happen. Stuff happens to everyone everywhere, redundancies, work changes, family dramas, opportunities and challenges. No matter where you're living, it's about making the most of it or changing it for the better. And then she said, sermon over. She's off to work out how the translation needed to persuade the hairdresser not to turn me into Carol Brady again.
And look, that said what I was thinking in a much better way. And it's true. And I think about it a lot. So if we'd stayed in Australia and never left, I would have kept working full time for the past 14 years. And I would never have had some of the opportunities I've had, you know, to spend time with my children or to do different things. I would never probably have learned how to do this. So you and I are podcasting together. Now I produce some other podcasts. I work with other people. So it's true. I would have probably stayed doing what I was doing or a version of it. And I never would have had this other kind of experience as well. So yeah, go Danielle.
Yeah, right. And I think the other thing that Danielle so rightly points out is you don't know what would have happened in your other life too. Maybe you were going to be made redundant. Maybe, you know, you were going to have to move within your own country. Maybe your partner was going to be made redundant. You know, you just don't know what your other life would have looked like. And, yeah, no, I don't think it's inspo at all, Nikki, that you've said that. I think sometimes we make ourselves feel, we put ourselves in that position of, you know, when people say, so what do you do? And you say, oh, nothing, or, you know, my husband does this or whatever. You know, I know that people always, when they say to me, oh, what took you to Qatar? And I make a real point now of saying, you know, well, we've been traveling for, you know, 17 years. It doesn't really matter where I am to do my job, but my husband needs to be in Qatar right now to do his, you know, so that maybe he's not the first thing that comes out of my mouth. We moved for my husband's job, you know, but also like Daniel says, own it and find it. Do you know, I think sometimes we don't find the sentence we like. We keep saying that same thing. Maybe everybody who's feeling a bit powerless and pissed off needs to think about what they want their sentence to be to that question.
So Kathy says, I'm never powerless. I'm a strong woman and I can always get pissed off. So, yes, I'm with Kathy.
Oh, dear. Look, so I want thoughts from the group. Last week we asked people to tell us how they met, who their first expat friend was and how they met them. And we can't put everyone's in, so we're just going to put a couple in now. Can we do that, Nikki? Can we sneak them in right now?
Yeah, I'll put them in now.
Hi. Your latest podcast got me thinking about who my first expat friend was. And strangely enough, I originally thought of my friend in the US, who I met 6 years ago. But actually, I've been an expat for nearly 10 years. Before the US, we lived in Germany. And maybe because I speak German and because we were so close to the UK, I didn't really feel like an expat. I'm not quite sure why. But I guess technically my first expat friend I met through work, a lovely Scottish lady, and we actually bonded over our dislike of being where we were. And then the expat friend who I originally thought of when I started thinking about it, I met through a baby group, first time mum, not knowing what we were doing, and have stayed friends since then. So they are my first expat friends. And that's it from a very confused, obviously, listener who, funnily enough, is back in Germany.
Hi, I'm Fiona. I'm currently in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. This is our fifth move in the last 5 years, so I've had to learn how to make friends pretty quickly. When we first moved away, we went to Norway, to Trondheim, and in Trondheim, there's no expats. Well, not really, not many. And we didn't have any children, and I was just a 26-year-old who at the time wasn't able to work. So making friends was hard, but I did do it. I used Meetup. I actually made my own Meetup group, and we ended up making a pub quiz team called Armitage Shanks after the toilets. And we were a pretty good quiz team. We were the champions that year, and we made some great friends through that, and I believe the team's still going.
Hi, my name's Julie. I've been in Qatar now for 12 months, and I met my first friends by going along to a school parent body committee meeting. Vowed I wasn't going to get roped in, but 12 months down the line, I am truly suckered in. However, without the ladies that I met that night, I'm sure my first 12 months would have been a lot harder. They have been fantastic. Thank you, girls. You know who you are.
Okay, so that was last week's question. So this week we're asking, do you feel powerless and pissed off, or the opposite? Do you feel very powerful, or I guess empowered, for want of a better wanky term? But let us know how you feel about your expat situation.
Yes, do. Please do, because I want to hear your inspo.
Okay, social media and beyond. Nikki, podcasts, what have you been listening to?
Podcast, so Unspeakable. Have you listened to Unspeakable? I did mention it to you briefly.
No, I haven't. And I haven't gone there yet, because I did see my friend Kim from All Consuming. She's been doing so much Instagram Live lately. I don't know if you follow her, Nikki, but she's really good at it. She does a lot of Instagram stories because she has a hashtag called Every Night, which is about her cooking for her boys, because she has four beautiful boys and she is an absolute demon in the kitchen. But yes, she, in one of her Instagram stories, said that she was watching Unspeakable and finding it a little bit difficult. So I guess that maybe swayed me a bit in the because you've got to be in the right mode. Yes. To sit and listen to that stuff. So now tell me, how is it?
Okay, so Unspeakable is about understanding sexual crime, and it's a podcast by Victoria Police, and it's real life cases and people behind them. It's 6 episodes and there's only been 3 so far, and I've just listened to 2, and they have experts, victims and survivors. And the thing about it is quite confronting because it's real. It's not sort of a reproduction of anything. It's real people talking about the situation. It's police investigators. It's people who've been involved. So the first episode is quite amazing. It talks about reporting crimes. And there was a situation where they had one girl who was sexually assaulted as a child and had gone on an overseas trip, as many young Australians do, and came back when she was 19 and said to her mother, you know, I was sexually assaulted as a child. Her mother believed her and wanted to help her. And she said, I don't want to do anything about it right now. I just wanted you to know. And apparently that's very common, that people, one, they don't report it straight away, and two, it's a process for them. And so several years later, she was actually diagnosed with a terminal illness, and it made her want to seek some kind of outcome for it. So then she went to the police, but very close to the end of her life. So the police actually went to the hospital to take the information down and take the report of the crime. And the episode is very, I mean, it's all the names are, you know, you don't know who it is, but it's just very confronting, the whole thing. And I was cleaning my house and I was crying when I was listening to it. But I think it's an important thing, because it's got an important message, because it's telling people what actually happens. So just because you're assaulted as a small child and you don't tell anyone, or nothing's done straight away, it doesn't mean that there can't be some kind of outcome that will help you in the future.
Oh, God. Okay, now I want to listen to it. And yeah, that is a really good message, because quite often you think, well, how are they ever going to arrest someone like that? Like, how will they ever get that evidence and be able to do it? But, oh, wow. Okay, I will listen to that. Now, the one that I've been listening to is Ladies, We Need to Talk. And it's an ABC podcast, and it's made by Yumi Stein, who I love. Yumi was on a great show called The Circle, which was Chrissy Swan was on that. This is Australian again, so I'm sorry for our overseas. I say our overseas. We're all overseas. Good Lord. I'm sorry for our not Australian expats, but I do think this is great. No matter where you are. Yumi also has a radio show in the afternoon that she does called the 3 p.m. Pickup. But I really love this episode. Now, this will go with everyone, because there was initially a French cartoonist, Emma, who coined something called the mental load. Have you heard about the mental load, Nikki?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Keep talking.
Yes. So the mental load was a cartoon that this woman made and released. Oh, I'm not sure of the date, how long ago it was, but maybe back in May. But she released a cartoon, and it showed a woman who went to a couple's house for dinner, And when she arrived at the couple's house for dinner, the woman was making the dinner while she was also sort of settling kids to put them in bed. And the pot pan overflowed, and I'm making this long story very short, but the pot pan overflowed and the husband jumped up and said, why didn't you just ask, you know, as in, why didn't you just ask me to help you and that wouldn't have happened? And the mental load, I guess, is all the stuff that you have to think about on your own that the other person doesn't have to think about. So maybe you've got the schedule where you're ringing the plumber and you're organising for the plumber to come at 1 o'clock, and you're also thinking about the child that needs the uniform ready for tomorrow and the other child that's got the costume ready for Thursday, and you're taking on all of this stuff in the back of your mind that is the mental load that somebody else in the relationship is not thinking about. And it's really, really good. And this podcast is so well produced. I think that's what it is too, is that she walks you through the thoughts and the feelings of what's happening within her day and texting her husband to tell him, you know, can he be at home because the plumber's at the door, and can he do this, or can he shove the chicken in the oven, or can he do whatever, because she's the one that's carrying that mental load of things that have to be done. It's really, really interesting, and I have really enjoyed it. So it's called Ladies, We Need to Talk. And I really probably thought I was over having enough women talking on podcasts. Does that sound as rude as what I think it just did?
We're women talking on a podcast, so I don't know.
Yes, and I listen to a lot of women talking on podcasts, and I really started to think, God, don't we have enough women talking about women's issues? Or maybe there's never enough, I don't know. But I really, really enjoyed it.
It's on my list. I have downloaded it, and I've got some episodes ready to go. So I'll do that today.
Okay, books, what are you doing?
Books. So this week I did some reading, in inverted commas, and I went back to my audiobooks. And I had my first ever Audible disappointment. I'm so sad.
What was it?
Okay, so the book, I'm enjoying the book. It's called Who Thought This Was a Good Idea? And it's Alyssa Mastromonaco. And she is an American. She's in her early 40s. She worked for Senator Obama, who then became President Obama. So she worked for 6 years in the White House when she was in her late 20s, early 30s, which is, of course, quite amazing. I've heard her speak on a lot of podcasts before, and I love her style. I love the way she speaks. But I do not love listening to her reading her own book. So that was kind of a bit of a disappointment. Now, I've always said I think you should read your own book, Kirsty, but I'm maybe reconsidering.
Now, you have heard me actually read the first chapter of my book. I should rephrase that to, you forced me to read the first chapter of my book because we had nothing else to read. But but I actually did think that at the time. I don't think I'm a particularly good reader, and I think it could be very boring. I don't know.
I guess if you listen to a lot of Audible books, you are listening to people who do it professionally. So a lot of them do it professionally. But for example, Trevor Noah read his own book, Born a Crime, and it was brilliant, really brilliant. And so I thought, well, what can be wrong with someone reading their own book? And David Sedaris reads his own books, for example. But for this one, I'm enjoying the book, but I think it would be something that I would be enjoying more if I was reading it in my hands and I could make my own voice in my head.
Okay, so the book for me, I haven't read it yet. I've downloaded it, so I'm not going to talk too much about it, but it's called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And the reason I'm putting it here is it is our book group book. So just a heads up to anyone else who is wanting to do that sort of following along at home, because a couple of people said, can you just please tell me what your book group's going to read and I'll read it too because I want a good suggestion. So Henrietta Lacks was a African-American tobacco farmer, and I'm pretty sure she had cervical cancer. But what happened was her cells were taken. Her cells were used in the discovery of developing the polio vaccine and cloning and gene mapping and IVF and all these other things. She was only 31 when she died, but she died a pauper from what I gather. But I think the term that they use is it was an immortal human cell line, so that the cells just keep, they never die. And the tissue, and it was a tissue sample that was taken from her. I don't want to go into it too much, but to give you an idea, I gather her family never knew. And I gather there's been a lot of money that was made through medical research from using her cells, and her family had no idea that that was the case.
Yeah, that sounds, wow, it sounds really interesting. I'll be very interested to hear when, after you've read it.
Yes. Okay. Screens, what have you been watching?
So have you seen any episodes of Zoo?
No. What is Zoo?
Zoo is a TV series on Netflix, and it's very disturbing, and don't watch it.
Okay.
It's about animals sort of rising up and becoming, sort of taking over the human's role. And it starts, I've only watched sort of the first few episodes, but it starts in Africa. So people are on safari and sort of just, you know, taking photos of the lions and the elephants. And then the lions become a little bit nasty. And it's very, very scary. And I haven't been so scared.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think it's meant to be a horror thing. And I haven't been so scared watching something like that for a long time. But I was watching it, I think, with my husband. He said, you're just scared because you've been in that situation. So you're putting yourself back there and thinking, what if those lions did that? Anyway, that's a no for me on Zoo. One thing I did that I have watched that I do have enjoyed is Ozark. Did you watch Ozark at all? It's also on Netflix.
No, but I've seen like it come up on my Netflix. What's it about?
Okay, so it's got Laura Linney and Jason Bateman in it, and they're two fantastic actors that I really enjoy watching. And it's about a guy who is a money launderer, and he gets himself into a particular sticky situation and has to sort of leave town, and they go to the Ozarks. But the Ozarks are an area in this America, but it was all filmed in Georgia, very near to where I lived. So I actually wondered that when I was watching, I was like, this looks so like it could be around Atlanta, and it was. So that was kind of interesting to me once I realized that. But it's about their life. So they move from a big city life. They have two teenage children, and they move to sort of this life by the lake in the Ozarks. And it's about what ensues, which is a lot of violence and crime. There's no comedy.
So is it funny or drama?
It's drama. Someone's compared it to be sort of like the new Breaking Bad, but I never watched Breaking Bad, so I don't know. I mean, I never watched the whole thing, so I'm not really sure. But it's to, you know, it's to do with money laundering, and there's drugs and there's all sorts of things involved. So it's violence and crime and a little bit of sort of humor, but not comedy. So I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. I think Laura Linney and Jason Bateman are great actors. So I would recommend it for a look if someone wants to watch a few episodes to see what they think.
Excellent. Oh, I'll definitely do that. Now, I didn't do the Netflix thing this week, but I did a lot of catching up on telly because, of course, being back in Australia for, you know, 13 weeks or so, you start to get back into those Australian sort of series. So I rolled a couple of episodes of Survivor Australia, which is really good. You know, back in the old days, Survivor Australia was never good. It was never as good, I guess, as the American Survivor. It almost felt like Diet Survivor. You know, it wasn't quite cutting it. Yeah, Survivor Light. Whereas now Survivor Australia, although they do only win $500,000, my son pointed out yesterday, they don't win a meal. But it's getting as good, and I guess it's quite comical, and I've really enjoyed it. So I did a couple of episodes of that. And then I was reading something yesterday by Gary Vee, who's kind of this, I don't even know how to explain Gary Vee. He's like a marketing online guru. But he used a phrase yesterday that telephones really are the new televisions, and televisions are now radios. And yeah, I totally agree with him with how that works in our house, because we only sit down to watch the television, you know, on purpose, to sort of, you know, purposefully listen to something, I guess. And our telephones, I sat in bed with my son last night, and we rolled about an hour of different YouTube videos where we just rolled from one to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And one minute we were watching some elephants that were chasing a safari guide in South Africa. And then the next minute we were watching the excerpts of Will and Grace and, you know, the funny bits. Do you know what I mean? Do you know how you can just get in one of those things? And that's how my children watch, get their entertainment. Do you know, they...
In tiny
they
little
really do.
Bites.
Yes. And they, I'm not too concerned about it because they both pick up a book and read. It's not like they've lost the ability to read, but they definitely choose these easy bits and pieces. You know, they have so many people that they love on YouTube, and yeah, it's just a different way of consuming content, isn't it?
My son is very au fait with lots of 80s icons and 80s culture references, and he'll suddenly come out with something and I'll say, how would you know that? I saw it on YouTube, you know, like references that I, you know, because there was no YouTube in the 80s, so you know, all the cultural references that we grew up with, and he'll say something and I'll just be like, oh my goodness, just blows my mind what he's actually been able to glean on,
yes.
Online.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Another cool bit, no, this isn't screens or whatever, but I just think this is very expat, is my son said to me today, did I know that there was a soccer game where the Syrians were going to play the Saudis, but they couldn't go to each other's country, and that Qatar offered to have it here, but they said no. And I was like, no, but I will look it up and find out about it. And he said, oh, you can find it on Al Jazeera. And I said, how do you know about it? And he said, oh, because we were in social studies, and often with social studies, people will bring their own news from home. And one of the Qatari kids was talking about it, you know, because we all tend to watch a lot of news from our own countries, but then we'll share what's happening in our own countries, you know, with each other, and our social studies teacher really encourages us to do that.
As your social studies teacher should.
Yes, that is so very cool though, isn't it? Okay, and the last thing I watched was, I finally watched, and I just completely forgot I didn't watch the last episode of This Is Us.
It's sitting in my to watch pile. I also haven't watched the last episode.
Yes.
How weird.
Do you know why I think that is? I think it's because we think we know what happens, because in that second to last episode, and I'm not ruining anything here, I don't think,
it's
in
months
that,
since it happened, yeah.
Yeah, in the second to last episode, you see the little girl tells him that he should be seeing his mother, and he gets in the car and he's drunk, and you think, oh, that's how he dies.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you that is not.
Yes.
So I think I just assumed, and I don't want to know, and I don't want to know anything else because I don't know anything about the second season, but I think I just assumed that that was what was going to happen at the end of that last episode, that we were going to see that. It's a great last episode, so go watch it. It is really, really good.
I will watch it, but I did see an article just after it came out saying that that wasn't what would happen, so I was like, okay, well, I don't need to watch it right now.
I don't know how you could even read that article that would tell you. See, I would have just stayed away from all articles, hoping,
I flicked past
in fear that they were going to tell
me.
Well,
the headline says things like, you do not find out how he dies. Like, oh. That's a headline.
Other things like Twitter and apps and whatever. One of the apps I'm using, because Nikki, I'm still madly doing my intermittent fasting and absolutely loving it. For those who aren't in the Facebook group, week one I managed to lose 2 kilos, and what I'm finding in week two, because it's weigh-in for me tomorrow, but what I'm finding in week two is this whole gig is getting easier and easier for me, that I'm finding I'll get to 12:30, and I at lunchtime I haven't eaten since 8 o'clock the night before, and I'm not even remotely hungry. I'm tending to do now like 17 hours of fasting and 7 hours of eating, and I could see that it could just get bigger. But the other thing that's happening is I'm, you know, now becoming ensconced to the world of finding all those things. So someone told me about nice cream, which is how you have ice cream without having the ice cream, and it's meant to be just as good. So I'll put a little link on the Two Fat Expats website for nice cream. And zoodles, where you have the machine where you can make noodles out of your vegetables. Spooky. and cauliflower rice, which I made, and I saw, Nikki, on your Instagram that you made cauliflower rice too.
Last night we had cauliflower rice and chicken, and I have one child away at camp this week, so I thought it was safe to introduce cauliflower rice without having a double hands up in the air. And yes, it wasn't, the child was not a fan, but the adults were fans, so we ate it all, so it was good.
Yeah. So the last thing I had was an app called Zero, and that's how you record your fasting. So basically, if you download the Zero app, you can tap when you have your last meal, and then it will record your fasting, and it will send you a little note to tell you when you've hit your 16 hours. And it allows you to kind of play with the time a bit, or to adjust how long you want to fast for, etc. But highly recommend it. I saw it in one of those Facebook groups, you know, the 16-8s or the intermittent fasting Facebook groups, and downloaded it. Okay, Nikki, what have you found on the interwebs this week?
Well, the other thing I've done is gone back to Roku accounts. So Roku accounts are rotation curation accounts. So they're accounts a lot of the times by companies or by countries where people take on having the account for a day or a week or whatever. So I got back into it.
Oh, yeah.
So I got back into it by looking at the I Am Germany account, because it also finds like lots of people who interact with it regularly. So the I Am Germany account is in English, which is excellent. So there's lots of people who respond, you know, because usually they ask a lot of questions and there's a lot of interaction. So you can also find other cool people in your country on Twitter to follow. And so I got into the I Am Germany account, and then it started suggesting all these other accounts to me. So the Netherlanders, people of UK, and We Are Australia. Now I can see I'm going to be spending a little bit more time on Twitter in the coming week and see if it keeps my interest. But I find it really interesting. And the person running the I Am Germany account this week is a German reporter who works out of Moscow. So it's been really interesting following her and reading or seeing the things that she's been doing. So that's been fun.
So can I just remind everyone again to go to twofatexpats.com, push the microphone button and leave us a message. Also, if you are hovering around iTunes, we'd love it if you could leave us a review or rate us as well. And come and join our Facebook group on Two Fat Expats on Facebook.
Okay, see you next week. Bye.
Bye.